Hey, Wonderfuls, welcome to episode 477 of the JV Club with my marvelous boy of summer. P.S. You're going to be so happy if you stick around to the end to hear a certain someone's cover of Boys of Summer. JPC. JPC, of course, is the third co-host of Hey Riddle Riddle. I've already had Adil Rafai and Aaron Keefe on, so you already know how much I adore them all and how much I love being even a tiny part of that podcast. One of my favorite things to do, period. So I was so excited to sit down with JPC, with Japes, as some call him, and talk to him about his teenage years and more. Hope everyone's doing well. If you're in the San Diego area and you are listening to this episode when it drops, tomorrow, Friday the 22nd, I will be at SDCC, San Diego Comic Con, with Dante. We're going to be doing a live Braving the Elements there. If you are in the Chicago area, 2 weeks from then, that's that first weekend of August, I will be at the C2E2 Comic Con. So hopefully there's an opportunity for me to see some of you in person at one of those places. And I gotta tell you, whether I will or won't see you in person, which I hope I do, I still hope you're doing very well. And I will still talk to you next week. I definitely have lost recordings. I've forgotten to record a backup. But I think because I do a lot of things, people are like, well, she can't. I mean, if she's got this much going on, surely she's super, super fastidious and type A. And that's not the case. I mean, I'm not a total mess, but
I give Casey a hard time for being a perfectionist, but I'm just a perfectionist that I feel like maybe manages it a little. I can give the appearance that I'm very chill, but I'm Mr. Organization. So, like, I dot every I and check every T, but it's just because okay. That's, like, that's the way that I have to function. That's just what my brain does, so.
Yeah. But that's enjoyable, though, because I bet people think that because you're so funny and you've created this persona on the podcast, on Hey Riddle Riddle, I should say, that is sort of like, I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
That's kind of a great alter ego for somebody who checks every eye.
I do like the persona a little better, and I like it. I like how people see that one because that's the fun one, right? Like I like to have fun, but I'm like a quiet like introvert. I don't really love like social things at all either. So it is fun for me to get to like play against that type.
Yeah. On your other podcast, are you, when you're listening and commenting and finding new music and all that kind of stuff, because that almost seems like it could be like cataloging a thing, like that there could be more of a sense of kind of like law and order to it. I might be exaggerating that.
Yeah, I do feel like I'm playing less of a character on that show. But also it's not like a comedy podcast. It's like, it's a music review podcast that I think is like interesting, but it's really just like a vanity project for me and my friend to like listen to music that we wouldn't really listen to.
It's so smart. There's so much like that in podcasting where I learn more than I ever cared about things outside of podcasing.
Yeah.
I feel like it's made me, podcasting has definitely made me smarter, a more well-rounded person. And if I need to do something and stick to that task in a period of time, you might as well just make a podcast about it. That's going to keep me on point.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And it was one of those things where I wanted to learn how to edit podcasts too. So I was like, oh, if I have my own and just do all the editing for it, then I'll be able to do that. And it is fun. It's like it's interesting to like pick up another skill set. And God forbid if anything ever happened where Casey couldn't edit for some reason, I would be able to edit a Hey Riddle Riddle episode, and people would comment. They'd be like, why is the editing on this one so weird? And I'm like, because I did it. But I did it. But I could do it. Theoretically,
yeah,
could I
could
do
or,
it.
Or Adil say that they could do that? Do they have the... Can they edit the podcast?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so, but I don't think they have any desire to, whereas it was one of those things where I was like, oh, this is an interesting thing, and I do have a desire to, like, learn how to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you, I mean, should we talk shit about that? I mean, it's the first time and I have ever been alone together.
I know.
So
I could blast
speak.
Off all day.
This is a lot of opportunity just sitting here in the black void of empty space behind you.
I was talking to my wife about this yesterday because I was like, I love like roasting people, but I don't love the idea of a roast. Like I don't love the formalized like, hey, everybody get together and like roast a person, because you really can only really roast people that you know really well. Because I feel like you have to like, otherwise a roast is just about how people look. Like, hey, this guy's teeth suck or whatever. And it's like that's that to me is not fun. But it is fun to roast my friends.
Here's what I have to say. I would argue, and I'm not sure I have the cash to back this up. That's not an expression. I would argue that you like to razz people.
Oh, for sure.
And that you don't like the idea of a roast.
Yeah, I love a razz, but
that seems like a gentle. That seems like a gentler roast, like among friends. I guess that's how that's maybe what I think of. I think of a nice razz.
You probably get this too, but when you do a thing and you put it out in the public, like especially with Adele and Aaron, we know each other really well, and then that influences the way that we talk about each other. And then someone else will like that we don't know will be like, "Hey, you couple of douchebags," and it's like, "Okay, man, like I've never met you before." Like
I know.
If a stranger said that to you, you would be upset, right? Like you wouldn't like that. And so the parasocial aspect of it is weird, yeah. But I do also like I said. I fucking love to razz. I love to razz.
Yeah. Do you feel ready to razz? Like, how do you feel about working level with me? You don't feel at all like you could be ready to razz with me.
I mean,
it's very confusing. Speaking of parasocial relationships, which is a term I only knew about like maybe a month ago, and is a great term that should have existed a long time before and probably didn't. I just didn't know it. It's very confusing to be called the fourth host of a podcast that you love.
Oh, yeah.
Knowing you have no business being called that. And. There's a sense of like fast forwarding, and I know obviously Adele a little better, but there's a sense of being thrust in like 88 miles per hour into a podcast where you want to feel like you are that because I'm such a fan of you guys, but like I don't record with you. I mean, you record so many episodes,
yeah.
And then I come in, I'm like, yes, I'm fired up, I'm ready, I've been doing my homework because I listen to the podcast, and it's worse. It's worse that I listen to the podcast because then I'm extra aware how out of place I am.
Well, I don't
know. Nightmare. So there's no good way to say you're going to stop doing someone's podcast. This, to me, felt the most gentle. You seem like you're going to be the least upset about it.
If you're going to tell bad news to anyone, it's probably going to be to me because I will be the best at dealing with bad news.
Right.
So it sucks to hear.
Or good news.
Or
you might also you flip it and are you the best person to give good news to?
Probably not, because if you have good news and you want a reaction from that good news, you probably don't want to give it to me because I'll be like, oh great, good news, thank you. which is not necessarily I think what people are looking for when they deliver good news.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, again, you kind of remind me of my friend Cole in that way, because he is such an energetic, fast, funny improviser, and I always mistake that persona for somebody who's going to be cartoonishly happy when things happen. I've been collaborating with him on so many different things for like 20 years or something, and I'm still surprised when I'm like, oh my God, we got it right now! And he's like, I know.
That's cool, huh?
It's cool. And I'm like, but you're the guy who makes like screeching dinosaur sounds for no reason on stage. Like, where's that guy?
Yeah.
I want that guy to show up for my good news. Come on.
It's interesting also with being an improviser, and I've been an improviser for like 20 years, so it's just been a long time of doing this thing where a lot of times you're just really excited to work with whoever, right? Like,
yeah.
I spent a long time like playing with specific people, you know, on teams and stuff. But then I would do pickup shows where you're just like, hey, great, I get to play with this person who I've admired their work for a while, and you can just kind of slip into it. And sure, maybe it won't be the like smoothest transition, but I do feel like it's this built-up skill of being able to integrate into, you know, quasi-social situations very easily. And I think with us being like, Janet, fourth host, it's very much the energy of like, we're improvisers. We think that we can slot, you know, nothing. This is not a slight against you, but we could slot anyone in a very welcoming way, but not knowing that maybe not everyone feels like up to that task. So sometimes when we ask people to do the show, we're like, this is a show you have to improvise on. And some people are like, oh, that terrifies me. We forget right. about the part where it terrifies them. Or at least I do, because it doesn't terrify me. So I'm like, oh, it's really bad. Like, you don't have to worry about it being good. Like, it could be really, really, really bad.
Yeah, I think, too, I mean, again, just sort of getting the difference between, I mean, it was so fun doing the live show with you guys because, you know, it's just a different energy, and it felt,
for sure.
And for me, I felt so much more like, oh, this, like, I could do this every week
yeah.
with these three people forever, and I would be happy, and I feel like I'm holding, like, I'm keeping up my end, I'm holding up my end, and that is, you know, it is sort of different having to do the Zoom thing, but I feel like you guys have really, like, the how still solid you are as improvisers is fantastic for being separated.
What's funny is that I definitely like in person better, but I don't miss in person because the little things that were annoying to me about recording in person, which are, a lot of them are like little technical things, because I do think of this as like, oh, ultimately this is to reach people's ears. And even like with my like sound setup in my space, when you record in person, you get like mic bleed on each other's mics and stuff like
that.
It's messy. It's a little dirty. For our sound editors, you know, purposes, it's much easier to use our audio from, you know, from remote. And so, like, that stuff I consider when I'm like, how is this, as a recording medium, I don't miss it. I don't really miss in person that much. I don't really think I had that big of a problem, like, swapping into the Zoom of it all.
Yeah. In general, I don't miss live performances for all of the things that I always hated about live performances, which was leaving my house.
Yeah, exactly. Traffic.
And
parking.
Traffic and all that kind of stuff. And then I get there and then I feel like, oh, but I don't know that probably resets every time. Like every time now I'm going to do a live thing, which is still very rare. But I also was never a person. Hey, everybody, this is the About Hey Riddle Riddle podcast. As you know, I talk to people about their teenage years. No, it's my fault. I'm excited to nerd out about your podcast with you. I talk to people about their teenage riddles, live show riddle, improviser's riddle, and this has been the JV Club. I think it resets, and I still feel a sense of dread every time I have to leave. And I never did the, like, I'm on a team, and it's the same team, and we perform every week. Like, I actually didn't really do that. I've never been that long-term consistent about being on one improv team. So that's not even a dynamic I'm used to. And so even just doing live shows is not, like, built into my schedule enough and hasn't been for such a long time that when I have one, I'm like, oh, how does this work?
That's so interesting to me because for sure with improv, I feel like I've loved doing it for as long as I've done it, but the best shows of my life have been with the people that I performed with, like, regularly. I mean, I had my independent team in Chicago hosted a show for 4 years, and you know, those were some of the most fun shows that I ever did because it was with my three best friends and we were just like playing and having fun together. And then just the especially at IO, RIP, the Herald structure of you getting like combined onto a Herald team. You know, I was on a team for 5 years, and it was great. I mean, we learned how to play with each other. We learned each other's idiosyncrasies. We learned each other's language, right? Like, we knew exactly what move someone was calling for when they were calling for it. And that was so satisfying because you get to – it truly gets to be a little bit of magic. You put it in front of an audience, and people think – I mean, people would legit – they'd come up to you and say, that was scripted, right? Like, there was planned. It's like, no, I just know when to let – you know, when to let Brad go and when to, like, edit, you know? So it's a learned skill, but it's very fun to see and it's very fun to do well.
I love that you told me you very early on in this conversation, you reiterated that you are a sort of a quiet person when the teen photo that you sent me is like a professional photo backdrop and you are a Muppet. You're essentially a Muppet.
I will say I get my recharge time alone, right?
I love
my, like, introvert. I'm like 51% introvert, you know, 49% introvert, but extrovert. But I a lot of what I do as a performer is like big, broad, and extroverted. So it's like, yeah, if it's a photo of me, I'm performing for the majority of it.
I mean, it's a great picture. I can't see what your
jersey.
I can't see what your Henley. I don't know what it was.
It was a baseball jersey style shirt that I had purchased at IO back when it was Improv Olympic. I had just gone there. That picture is from my junior year, and so I had just gone to Chicago with my buddy Rick for an intensive at Second City when we were both 17, and we spent every night at IO. Improv Olympic was what it. No, I guess, was it still IO at that point? It doesn't matter.
I forget why it changed and had to become IO.
They got sued by the Olympics. Apparently, the Olympics, they don't love people just calling something the Olympics when it's not the Olympics.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, it's like how you can't have a...
What's the risk? No one's gonna I mean, all these jokes have been made before, I'm sure, when it happened. But, like, no one's going to show up at the Improv Olympic and be like, I thought this was the Olympics.
This isn't sponsored by the Olympics? Huh, interesting. I thought improv was a accepted
that
Olympic
sucks.
Sport. Yeah, it's like calling your improv theater, like, the Super Bowl Improv Theater. It's just like, you're going to get sued for that behavior. But yeah, that was my first time seeing like Chicago Improv when I was 17,
See how expert this is.
From Indianapolis,
where you were a teenager.
Where I was a teenager, yes.
Yeah, established it.
I started doing improv when I was like 14, and you know, I saw like Comedy Sports was what we had in Indianapolis, and I was on like the Comedy Sports high school leagues, and to go and see it being done in Chicago, like poof, blew my mind.
Yeah. Are there people that you would go specific? Like, I know you did the intensive, but were there a particular couple of people or like certain teams where you were like, that's my aspiration. That style feels so me. It feels like my version of like, I remember the first time I saw Conan O'Brien do his late night show and being like, oh my God, like that, I know that guy. Like, I don't know Johnny Carson. I don't know Dave Letterman. I certainly don't know Jay Leno. Like, those aren't people I know. And seeing Conan was the first person that I was like, oh, I know you. I could watch this. You know what I mean?
I definitely saw some celebrities, or, you know, quote unquote celebrities. Like, I saw when I was 17, and now I'm this sucks because I forget his name. I saw Ike Barinholtz.
Super famous.
Ike Barinholtz and his brother, whose name I don't remember, but his last name is Barinholtz. I know that much. Because they were doing a show with our teacher, whose name was Ryan Archibald, who was teaching us at Second City. And I remember seeing Ike Barinholtz and being like, oh, that's I know him. And their show was wonderful. But I saw so many other shows of just people, like not celebrities. Chicago is, you know, there was not a ton of like... I guess there was, like, you know, the Tina Fey's and everything of the world. But even more than that, there's just a lot of really solid improvisers, some of the funniest people I've ever met that are not, like... I mean, some of the funniest people I've ever met work day jobs, right? Like, I worked like in technology for, you know, 6 years. I had people who were architects that were like supremely funny. It's very weird to be in a city like Chicago where it's just like, that's what the improv talent was. So it was less that I was like, oh, these people, and more just like... these people are me. Like, I could do this.
Yeah.
It felt at the same time so mystifying and like it was blowing my mind and very much like, oh, I can move here and do this and that will be what I am capable of doing that.
Yeah. That's so cool. I absolutely watched Whose Line Is It Anyway as a kid, and I 100% like, I feel like I was like, oh, I like this, and I'm kind of the funny one in my class. And I just don't think I put it together. Like, for some reason, I felt like it was more reasonable that I would become, like, a serious actress. Like, that would be a successful path for me than doing the thing that's, like, frankly, way more fun. And, you know, neither one of them are any more realistic to have as a career than the other, really. So,
well, I apologize to anyone listening to this because I do not want to give the impression that having a career as an improviser is an attainable thing. I teach improv a lot, and I say, look, if your aspiration here is to be famous doing improv, you got to get that out of your head. Like, if you want to be a comedian, like, go write. You know, go. Improv is not going to be the path to you not having to work anymore.
Right.
It turns out it was the path for me, but I
don't do it.
I don't think there was ever a moment where I was like considering that it might not have been. Like I said, I worked in like the tech industry in Chicago for the majority of the time that I was doing improv. But I will say, I always felt like I was doing it for the right reasons. Like, I was doing it because I loved doing it, and it's what you do in your spare time. You know, you give 6 or 7 nights a week to it, and you sacrifice a lot of, like, your personal life, but it was so fun. It was just so fun to do.
Yeah. See, that's when you say you did 6 to 7 nights a week. In my mind, I'm like, but how can you be an introvert? Like, I just couldn't, I wouldn't be able to leave the house. Like, day 4, I would be like, I can't be. I'm not doing this again, right? Like, I gotta cave up for a while.
There were plenty of day 4s in there. And apologies, that's my dog. We gave my dog a bath today, and she has been just heinous ever since. She did not like that bath.
It's insane the sort of surplus of energy that comes from somewhere inside a dog's body and mind following a bath. That's like, where was this? Like, this is use burn through this faster, because this is like, this is living in a weird, like, extra like compartment somewhere that only is released when you take a bath, and it is crazy. It's like demonic.
It's a glint in her eyes that is like, oh, you yes. are going to be unmanageable today. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Same.
But she hasn't had a bath since November, so, and we're not recording this crazy ahead of time, so it's been a long time since she's had a bath, and she was very stinky.
Do you ever take her to somewhere, or does that feel like an expense that's like, what are we doing? You gotta just bathe this dog.
Because
I go back and forth on that.
She has the anxiety, so it's like, I can't even take her anywhere. She has to, everything that I do has to be done like by hand on this thing, uh-huh. because we took her one time, we took her to a kennel for like an overnight stay, and it was like a test day. We weren't even out of town, but they were like, yeah, bring her here to test. And I went to pick her up, and they're like, well, so she failed her overnight test. She howled like a crazy dog all night long. Every other dog was very upset about it, and I had given her like 3 trazodone for anxiety, which should have zonked her out, but instead she just became a howling zombie. So after that I was like, okay, so we manage her anxiety in different ways, but she's a stay-at-home dog for sure.
Well, wait. So when I just saw both of you, where was she?
She was at home. We can't
like somebody who came over.
Yeah, exactly. We have like house people come over and friends, or at that point I think it was Mariah's brother, my wife's brother, who came and stayed with her.
You got it. You can't ever run out of friends. You got to always keep a stable of people who are going to be willing to come in and dog sit.
And it's hard for me to be nice to that many people, but I have to do it. Like, I have to maintain these social bonds. Because
It's for her.
Everything that we do is for her. The
so
house
beautiful.
We bought for her. Uh-huh. The friends that we keep for her. It's all for her.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
In the briefest time, I feel like we got to know each other.
Bro, I appreciate you so much for that.
Do you read minds or what?
It's really a very sacred space you've created here.
Bullseye! You've hit the bullseye, baby!
Bullseye! Interviews with creators you love and creators you need to know. From MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Did you have pets growing up?
Yeah, I had a dog in like grade school through. She died when I was in high school, and then we adopted another dog when I was a sophomore in high school, who was a great dog. But when my mom moved away, we had to give that dog up. And then I think at one point we had adopted a stray cat because there was a half indoor, half outdoor cat. Like sometimes we just wouldn't see it for 3 days, but it was like it came up to my little brother and my mom at the library and just kind of like flopped down, and they took it home and
inside the library.
Yeah,
paging through a novel. Hello.
We had a 95-pound lab who was like very prey oriented, and we brought home this like skinny, starving cat, and the lab got in that cat's face, and she smacked it with her claws one time, and the lab never messed with the cat again.
I feel like that's kind of the folklore around cats and dogs.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't even think, it's funny, because when you said that, I was like, wait, are labs sort of predatory in the way? Because, like, I have a husky, and it doesn't even matter. If she wants to play with another dog, it doesn't matter. Her look of intensity looks like she is going to hunt down something and tear it to shreds.
Yeah.
Like, there's no difference in the way she looks. But I think of labs as being so like, me, pick up something, I don't know.
They're dumb and goofy, but this one went after squirrels like nothing else. Like, squirrels, possums, any outdoor thing, she just could not get enough of.
Yeah. Okay, well.
Yeah. I did grow up with dogs, and I'm definitely a dog person. I'm allergic to cats, which sucks because I kind of like cats as well. But I take a daily allergy medicine anyway because I'm allergic to the world as well. So I probably could, hack it with a cat. But we're comfortable being a one dog family with our anxious dog at this point.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
I've developed an allergy to my dogs over the years. When I first got tested for allergies, I was allergic to a bunch of other stuff and not dogs. And then when I just got tested last year, He was like, and everything is the same? Of course, this, of course, dogs. And I was like, check the chart. That was not there before. I think this is a mistake. And he was like, oh, no, I'm sorry. You've developed those allergies.
The fact that you can develop allergies, what a con. What a
so
what a
mean.
Yeah, just rough treatment by the world. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks. Indianapolis is one of those cities. I've been there once, but I don't have a sense of, like, when someone says they live in Chicago.
Sure.
And they say Chicago, I definitely can picture the city of Chicago, and I have a sense of, like, yes, there are a bunch of different neighborhoods, but, like, you're in a city. Don't be mad, but is Indianapolis more like a city of, like, just kind of suburban-y neighborhoods and then, like, a smaller downtown? I can't remember. And I think I was staying out more, like, by a convention center, which was more remote, you know?
Indianapolis does not have a huge downtown. It's, like, Indianapolis, like, proper, like, all of Indianapolis, I don't know, it's, like, a little over a million people, I think. But what Indianapolis is we have an interstate circling Indianapolis, and everything inside of that interstate is Indianapolis. So it's,
that's
like, 60...
That's the gooey, chocolatey center.
It's, like, 60 miles wide. It's okay. Huge. So there's a lot of Indianapolis, and so it can feel like suburban and like neighborhoody. But it's just because it's like so kind of spread out and dispersed.
Okay.
But I grew up on the east side of Indianapolis, and then for anyone who's from Indiana, my parents are divorced, but my mom lived on the east side, and my dad lived in Carmel. Carmel is like the hoity-toity part of Indianapolis. So when I tell people my dad lived in Carmel, they're like, "Oh, your dad lived in Carmel." But my dad's section of Carmel was annexed, so he didn't live in like the nice hoity-toity part of the town. He lived in the part that they were like, "Yeah, I guess we'll take this because it's on this side of the river. I guess we'll have this part of Carmel." So I don't know. Indianapolis, I'll never go back there. Like, I'll never live there again. Indiana in general, not for me. Not my people. Not my tribe. But yeah, you know, to each their own. Like, I won't even say it's a perfectly nice place because it's not. It's just a place. It's a place that exists. My brothers both live there, and they're nice guys. But Indiana in general, we won't be seeing much of each other anytime soon.
Yeah. I think it's funny that you described it as being encased by a freeway, which I turned into candy, and then you promptly added on that your dad lives in Carmel. That felt like such a weird gift. Well, I didn't mean. Way, great, cool. Thank you for that. And did they share custody? Like, you went to the same high school, and were you seeing both of them a fair amount?
My parents got divorced when I was two, so I never really knew them like as a couple. So when I grew up, We didn't split time. My mom had primary custody, but it was like my dad, I think it was like Wednesdays and every other weekend, I believe.
Yeah.
We floated between a fair amount, but
who's we? You have siblings?
Yeah, I have an older brother and a younger brother. So my older brother's 3 years older and my younger brother's 2 years younger. So we were just like,
instead of saying the Coen brothers, I almost said the JPC brothers.
Well, that's
as if that was your last name.
It's funny too because my older brother's my half brother, so he has a different last name. My little brother is my like full blood brother, different last name. I changed my name when I was 20, so I have a different last name. And my mom kept her maiden name after she got divorced from my dad.
Has the same name.
No one in my family has the same name, which is wild.
That is wild.
Yeah,
mom kept my last name. Only because, like, she and my dad split up when I was really little, but she was like, I want to be associated with my daughter. And so, and they didn't like do anything fancy like hyphenate or anything, which they kind of could have and almost should have. Like, they seem like the kind of parents who might have done that,
yeah.
But they didn't. And so my mom just stayed Marsha Varney for the entirety of my life, but was never like, did not have a relationship to my dad other than like, yes, we had this kid together and are friends.
Well, that seems weird because also when I changed my name, not a single person in my family volunteered to change their name to the name that I changed my name to, which I think is kind of bullshit. Like, if they really wanted to be like closer to me, they all would have volunteered.
Wait, why did you change your name?
I never really had much of a connection to my old name. And so as soon as I was graduated high school, I started going by John Patrick Coen, which is my name now. And then I started going by it as like a stage name. And then the modicum of money that I was making via a stage name, I started being like, oh, it's confusing to tell people to like write me a check to a different name.
Sure.
So then I went to a lawyer and paid like the, you know, $400 at the time to change my name like legally.
Yeah.
There was a part of me that was like waiting until I was like, I don't want to, like, my grandma will not understand me changing my name. So I'll just, like, wait until she dies and then I won't have to, like, worry about it. And then I was like, what am I doing? Like, I'll just do this immediately because because it doesn't matter. I remember once my grandma was like, she was like, you'll always be this other name to me. And I was like, grandma, that could not care. I could not care less about that. I was like, that that matters to me not at all what you think of the name that I chose. Like, it truly doesn't. Because I always thought that was very weird about, like, other people being very protective of, like, your name.
Yeah.
But, it was one of those things where if I think about myself now, I think about myself with the name that I chose, and I don't think about myself with the name that I had when I was growing up.
That totally makes sense. That totally makes sense. And you're obviously not the only person who sort of had that experience.
Yeah.
Once again, that's just another thing where, like, I don't feel like I had a strong positive or negative association with my name, but I just didn't. Nothing. I feel like what I've learned from doing this podcast, lo these 10 years, is I just didn't think a whole lot about much. Like, I feel like there's a lot of me being like, it would never even occur to me to da-da-da-da. I'm like, what was I? It makes me feel kind of bad because I'm like, what was I doing? I mean, I was writing. I was like a creative kid. But there's just so much that people experience as younger people that I was just like, oh, I guess I could have thought to do that, or I could have thought about that. And like, it just never, I feel like my world was like very narrow in ways I didn't realize.
Well, what finally did it for me, because I had these, like, you know, flirtations, especially as a young person, with changing my name. But I think I was in high school where my grandma on my dad's side took me to see her husband's grave. Yes, grave. His headstone. And while we're at the headstone,
I don't understand what. I can't tell if you were searching for the right word or if the concept itself became like, was it his house? It was his grave.
I was trying to remember what the thing was that marks a grave. And I was like, tombstone, headstone.
Yeah.
But so we went to see that. And then she was like, oh, and we can see your great uncle's headstone while we're here as well. And she goes, you were named after your great uncle. And I had the exact same name. I was born with the same name as my great uncle, who died when he was like 7 days old.
Oh, no, that's super creepy.
I know,
I mean,
right?
No offense.
No, I was offended because I was like, I found that out and I was like, you guys named me the same name as someone who died as a baby when I was a baby? Is that not bad luck? That seems like terrible luck.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. I feel like there are weird stories in like historical crime stuff where, and even just regular, I don't know why I'm saying historical crime stuff, mostly because like most of the history I know anything about is probably adjacent to crime in some way. But people who like, you know, kept having a baby that would die. And then, you know, I'm like in the 1700s, they're like, and then I had Duncan. Mm-hmm. Of course, he didn't make it. So then I had Duncan.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, he lived 3 days. And then 2 years later, we were gifted with Duncan. Like, it's, no.
It's so.
Pick a different name.
Please pick a different name. It's just a very unnerving thing to tell a child who's like, oh,
and
okay.
Also, like, to see the physical gravestone is even worse. That's like makes a weird impression on you when you're a kid.
Yeah, I definitely made a weird impression on me when I was a kid. But it helped me because I was like, oh, this is not a name I have any connection with, and I can't wait to get out of it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
And was your high school really big? Was it like big football-y kind of high school?
So it actually was like a big football-y high school, but it wasn't a big high school because I went to Catholic school. I went to Catholic school like K through 8, and then there were two other Catholic schools, one on like the east side where I was from and then one on like the northeast side. And I went to the one on the northeast side. It was called or is called Cathedral. And I think I'm not a big football guy.
Cool.
I'm not a big football guy, but our school, I think, had a good football team. I believe we won state, but we were in a division that was like way lower. So it wasn't like a good football high school. It was like the best of a bad football high school, I believe. But again, I was not playing football, so I don't really know.
Why don't you ask me if we had a good football team?
Did you have a good football team?
No idea. Never occurred to me to go to a game. Never occurred to me to ask. Never occurred to me to have any awareness at all of any sports going on in my school.
Yeah.
What a nerd.
I know we had good football and we had good women's volleyball. That's what we had at my school.
Nice.
But I don't think I ever maybe went to a game unless it was one that I was like, I was in band for 2 years. So I did go to games that I was mandated to be at to play like the halftime entertainment, but that's pretty much it.
So that wasn't even, being in band wasn't an immediate, like, you will be at all of the games playing in the band for the games.
I don't really remember if we had to go to all the games, because that seems like way too many, but I do know that there were some games that we did. I don't think it was all. I think it was
really?
Just like... I think
again, I only know from what I've seen on TV shows and in movies, and there's always a band playing, so I'm drawing my conclusions from that.
Mostly what band did was we did marching band competitions, and so those were all done like on football fields, but I don't think that we went to a ton of like our teams. Our school was a small-ish Catholic school. My graduating class was like 350, and our whole school was like 1,200 kids. And
ask me how big my graduating class was.
Oh, I can't wait.
No idea. Couldn't tell you. Don't know how big my school was. Never occurred to me to pay attention.
And in my mind now, I just see like a version of you who's just very young with like your nose like just buried in a book for 4 years and like occasionally looking up to be like, what's going on?
I mean, I wish it were that cool. I mean, I definitely did plays.
Sure.
Like I was present enough to not have a good excuse for being that out of it for everything that didn't directly involve me. Directly involve me and my physical body being in a place.
Yeah, well.
It's very sad. All right, what did you play? What instrument did you play? Wait, should I guess?
Yeah, please. Marching band, I don't think you'll get it in a million years.
Okay. Is it because it's an instrument that was so dangerous it's since been retired?
Yeah, it only existed for like a 4-year period in Indiana and then they took it off the face
unlikely.
Of the earth.
Unlikely.
Actually, me saying that you won't get it in a million years probably gives too much away, so maybe you will get it, but that's all I will say if you want to guess.
Okay. So it's good. It's like something that people don't usually think of when they think of a marching band instrument.
Correct.
Well, we think of drums.
Sure, yeah.
We think of tubas.
Tubas, of course.
Obviously.
Big one.
We think of probably like some flutes, clarinets.
Woodwinds.
I don't feel like I've seen many violins or fiddles on the band.
Not a ton.
Circuit.
Not a ton.
Was it a woodwind instrument?
It was not a woodwind, no.
Was it some sort of portable organ, like a piano, like a thing you would think of as being stationary, that it was made a portable version for you?
I love that, but it was not.
Okay. Am I on to something with you would think this would be a thing you couldn't carry onto a football field?
Yes, because it in fact was not ever carried onto the football field.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I consider it like an air horn enough of an instrument.
That is
for you
so
to just
funny.
Be off in the background, like,
yeah, and I said that. I was in band, but I guess I was never officially in the band, whatever that means for the school.
Okay, never left the, I mean, I want it to be a harp. I don't think it is.
I think you're closest so far with harp, but it was not a harp.
Like a stand-up bass?
You're so close with stand-up bass.
Uh-huh.
But it is a
seated,
kind of bass.
Seated bass.
I play the electric bass.
Oh, I know you play bass. God damn it. Yeah. Well, I already know you play bass just as a human being but it didn't occur to me that would be, yeah, you're right.
I played the bass so poorly I got a bass when I was like in seventh grade and I learned how to play only tabs. And then I went to marching band and they were like, the first day I got to band camp, it was like pre-high school, like the summer before high school. And I had went to band camp and I met another guy who grew to be one of my friends in high school who also played bass. And I said, do you know how to read music? And he said, absolutely not. And I said, neither do I. And we found some other kid, a senior, to tab out our bass music for us.
Great.
So he took all the music that we were going to be playing that season or whatever and tabbed it out for us. Then the year after that guy graduated and they handed us more music and we didn't know what to do with it. So what we would do is that sophomore year, we would just, for competitions, we would just turn our amplifier off and we would pretend to play the music.
And no one ever noticed?
No one ever noticed. One time, and we, so we in pit crew, we're there with like the xylophones and like the gong and like the timpanis and the stuff that can't be carried onto the field to march around with.
Yeah.
And we would just jam out on, you know, the electric bass and we would like really groove and get into it. And at one point in a competition, we got a judge's note that the bass was too loud. Uh-huh. And we were like, okay, yeah, we'll turn it down a little more next time. And the whole time we were like, that bass wasn't even fucking on. We were just jamming too. We were just like dancing and grooving too much.
What a weird science experiment that somebody would see. I mean, possibly just see you gesticulating intensely and be like, that must translate to the music to them being too loud. They're too loud.
I was so much more of a theater kid than a music kid anyway. So after sophomore year, I was like, I can't do another 2 years of faking this. Also, with band, you had to do zero period, which was the period before first period.
No, we had to wake up so early and then
go to the field. Yeah, no, thank you.
Oh, no, no, no. I had so many absences from first period. So many absences. I was very difficult to wake up in the morning in high school and just hated it and was always so sad when a class I actually liked was first period, because I was like, oh, I would have enjoyed being there. I really would have enjoyed being there if it were a different time.
I never really was one for skipping school. I went to school the times that I was allowed to go to school, but my mom was okay with the idea of a mental health day. If you just told my mom, hey, I need a mental health day, she would be like, cool, I'll call in, you don't have to go to school. And I got called in, I don't know, it was like maybe junior year. We were allowed to have 10 excused absences per year. And I got called into the principal's office because I had 9 excused absences. And they were like, this is a lot of excused absences. And I said, no, it's not. It's one less than the number I'm allowed to take. I was like, if you wanted less excused absences, these are excused. I'm not even skipping school. Like they have been sanctioned. I was livid. I was so pissed about getting called in for that. And I was like, actually, I have one more before I even have to talk to you fucking people.
Yeah. That is interesting. It does. I mean, I would imagine that a lot of kids would take advantage of that, but maybe their parents weren't as on board for it. And you were the person that sort of pressed the issue because you were dangerously close to meeting that number. And maybe that, I wonder if they like reduced it after that. If they're like, oh, he's not wrong, matter. Let's ruin it for the rest of the kids next year and make it 4.
I went to, I'm not Catholic and I never was Catholic. And I went to Catholic school the entire time that I went to school. And I was actually, back then I was a little more hardcore about being an atheist. And so there was, I would push back pretty strongly in, which I think is good for learning. It's rigorous debate in all of the religion classes that were sanctioned to go on. But there was also just a lot of fights with the administration of the schools that I was going to. Like that picture that I took or that is, you know, for the episode, I assume. My hair was very long, and a lot of schools had like policies on how long boys' hair could be for whatever reason. And so I made sure when I was picking which high school I went to that I read their rules of conduct and I wasn't breaking them, because I'd gone through like 7th and 8th grade at my grade school really fighting my administration pretty hard on and having them update the handbook several times to accommodate for me trying to like worm my way through the rules. So I was always pretty aggro when it came to dealing with the administrators at my school.
You're a shit disturber.
Truly, I was. And my older brother was really smart, and they really liked my older brother, and so they needed him. Like he was like a national merit scholar and everything, so they needed his association. And I think I got a lot over on my, you know, connection to him in that way, which was great for me and not as great for my little brother.
Yeah, so by the time your little brother got into school, they were like, well, you have one of two options. You're either going to be this kid or this kid. Which one is it? As if he can't also be his own person.
I think we all found our own paths, because my older brother and I were very good at school. My older brother was very smart. I was just very good at school. And my little brother was like not good at school and had no problem like letting school know that he was not going to be good at school. So we all found out our own little like niche when we got there together.
Well, that seems like that's got to be like also kind of troubling to the administration, because if you are a shit disturber, it would be easier for them if what went along with that was like you also getting an F in this and a D in this, because F you, everybody. Yeah. And to be like fighting against something that feels unreasonable to you and then also doing well, I feel like, what do we do with this? This is like, this breaks all precedents.
I remember I got disciplined my junior year. I got kicked out of a religion class because of, you know, personality differences with me and the religion teacher at the time. And it was me and like 7 other boys got kicked out of religion class. And we couldn't go back for like a week when they were doing, I don't even know. They were doing like the whatever the Catholic version of sex ed is. So we were basically not allowed to go to class for a week, and we got sent to the...
Wow, they found something for a pack a whole week into for a Catholic version of sex. That seems like you're really stretching with the material you're offering.
Yeah, they said it originally. They were like, the rest of the semester you can't go back, but then they let us back like after a week. But we went to the... And it was just me and... I think it was me and like six other boys.
Wait, that's part of the religion class?
Yeah, dude. It was messed up. Whereas religion class was every year, and junior year, like the second half of the junior year semester was like sex education or something like that. And there was like a part where people were like sharing or asking questions or something, and they were like... These boys can't be in this class, which, you know, fair. I didn't want to be in the class anyway, so it wasn't really a punishment. But I got sent to the vice principal of, like, punishment. I can't remember what his title was. There were so many vice principals that each had their own individual role at my school.
Uh-huh.
And he was, like, the vice principal of, like, making sure you know that you're, like, a bad guy. And he... We got sent to his, and he was like going down the line to the boys, and he was like, "Jeremy, you're like, you're a football player. You should be a leader. I can't believe that you're here." And he got to me, and he pointed at me, and he goes, "You, I don't even know what you're doing here." And I was like, "That's all I get. And I don't even know what you're doing here."
Yeah.
Which I was pretty proud of.
I was going to say, hold on, because I feel like this is going to be turning on me to be something, a point of pride. I wish that there had been, it would be great if you had said that there was a vice principal for every sin. For sins of gluttony, yeah. When kids would eat too much.
We had the seven deadly vice principals, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
And who were like your friendships and like what you would do on the weekends and stuff. What was that like for you?
So for me, sorry to any of your young listeners, but by the time I got to high school, I was pretty done with like drug and alcohol culture mm-hmm. because I had spent my like 6th, 7th, and 8th grade years just getting absolutely fucking wasted. And so I was like closer to
6th grade.
Yeah.
Even as a person who dropped acid at age 13, I'm still like, oh boy.
I mean, I'm still from Indiana, and there truly was not much to do except, you know, steal liquor. I grew up in a Catholic neighborhood, so everybody had a fucking older brother or an older cousin, so you could get alcohol, you know, any which way that you wanted to. And I also, you know, I wasn't exactly enthused about it either. Like, I remember in like 6th grade, my friend started smoking pot, and I was like, fuck, I guess this is it now. Like, I guess I gotta smoke pot now. So, but by the time I got to high school, I was pretty over that. And I think that high school is also the age that people start discovering that in earnest.
Sure.
But for me, I was like, no, it's been too long. I want to get, you know, as far away from that as possible. So I was very much like in the theater, like nerd camp for most of my time in high school. But until senior year, when I was like our class officer or whatever, because I realized that I wanted to run for class office because you could put posters up all over the school. And I was like, oh, this is just an open license to like do jokes all over the school, which was fun. And since I won that race, I would always tell people, I was like, yeah, I was like, you know, class officer. But it's just basically a popularity contest.
Well, what does class
contest.
Officer mean? Because we would have, I mean, I feel like we had a student council. First of all, I couldn't tell you if we really had one in high school because I wasn't paying attention. But
I
was class secretary in 8th grade. But I feel like class officer sounds generic to me.
It was so generic because we had student council, which was something different. And then we had like, it was supposed to be like class president, vice president, whatever. But I don't know if for whatever reason my senior year they didn't want to like decide who was what or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was just like, it was me and 4 other people that got to eat pizza with the like principal like every couple of months and do nothing else. Uh-huh. And I think I was supposed to give a speech at graduation, I believe. I was supposed to do that. And then I think that there was some other duty that I was supposed to do.
And when you say supposed to, do you mean that you did not give a speech at graduation? Or did
yeah,
you
I just, one? I straight up no called, no showed on him because, and then I went and picked up my diploma like 3 days later, and they were like very mad at me, and I was like, you know, stay mad.
Yeah.
Who
yeah,
cares?
I didn't go to my graduation either.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I know. I was
you're my guy.
I was not very into the I was very anti-administration at my school, and I was not very much into following the things that they wanted kids to do.
I appreciate that so much. And then dating, were you dating at all?
I didn't really date much in high school. I dated like early on when I was like maybe like freshman year. But then I didn't really date between freshman year. I didn't date sophomore year or junior year until like senior year. I also have this philosophy as well with like people that I improvise with. Like I know that especially in Chicago, the improv community, a lot of people, you know, find partners there or like sure. go through relationships there. But I was like, it feels too close. Like this.
Oh
these
my
are
god!
The people,
that's such a wise decision. It's gets so messy and uncomfortable.
This is the community. Like I would just see like it tear up like friend groups and stuff like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
My best friend and I, also in school, we had the crush on like the same girl, and then I was like, and then he asked her out, and she like rejected him, and then I was like, well, now I can't ask her out because that's my best yeah. friend. Like I can't, yeah. I can't do that. So. Yeah, there was those complications, and I feel like I, in lieu of adjusting the social dynamics there, I decided to take myself out of that equation.
I'm on the bench, ladies.
Yeah, sorry, ladies. I'm on the bench.
Please, I'm on the bench.
I also wasn't really, like I said, like partying at that time either, so I wasn't really engaging in a lot of the those same like social things that other people were doing.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Hey, did grad school ruin your reading habits?
Oh my God, all those books you had to read for grad school.
Did becoming a parent destroy your ability to focus on a book? Did the pandemic tank the number of novels you can get through in a year?
Ugh, that happened to everyone, and we're Reading Glasses, and we're here to help.
We'll get you out of a book slump, dismantle all that weird reader guilt,
which we know you have a lot of, but most importantly, we'll help you fall back in love with reading. Reading Glasses, every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
I do like to play this game of MASH at the end of every episode. Are you familiar with what MASH is?
Mm-hmm.
Mansion, apartment, shack, house.
I never played this game in high school, which or ever really, and my wife explained it to me before I did the show. She was like, "Oh yeah, okay. MASH," and I was like, "MASH," and she was like, "You never played MASH?" And I was like, "No, I guess I had a very different experience."
There's no rhyme or reason to who knows what MASH is. I'm never surprised when someone's like, "I have no idea what that is." And I guess I am surprised sometimes when people are like, "Of course I know what MASH is." I'm
sure.
Like, "You're not the person I would have thought would know." But okay, all right. So I'm in it, but all you have to do is just answer off the cuff, which I am not worried about you doing at all. So
perfect.
Let's start with three TV shows that you would have loved to have been on, and it can be from any era, any time frame.
Is this when I was in high school, three TV shows that
this
I would have
like just,
loved to be
I mean,
on?
you can honor your high school self, but you absolutely, this is very much like what alternate universe can we build for you right now that you would be happy with?
Dude, okay, I get that.
Because fuck that little guy, you know what I mean? He's so over.
I think, especially like me as a kid, who is over, and was also just kind of a completely different person with a different name, I would have flipped to be like a character on The Simpsons. I think that would have been
yeah.
like, I loved The Simpsons growing up. So that would have been a big popular one for me.
But you would still be happy with that if we were like, and today you were also got to be on The Simpsons. Not this version of The Simpsons. It could be whatever era. Of the
yeah,
Simpsons
I was going to say, I don't want to like yeah. Talk smack because I haven't seen The Simpsons in you know, since
many
I was
years.
That age. But
yeah.
If I could pick an age where I wanted to be on The Simpsons, it would have been, you know,
yeah.
back then. Then I guess we'll honor the little kid inside of me that wanted to be on Saturday Night Live. So we'll do that okay. as well. But if I got offered to be on Saturday Night Live now at the age that I'm at now, I would uh-huh. say, oh no, thank you.
For sure.
Good luck. Good luck to you and yours. I'm all good.
For
I'm
sure.
all good here.
For sure.
One more, and then you know I watched a ton of it in high school, so I'll probably say Friends. But then I would tell people nowadays, I'm like, oh yeah, like my character didn't age well. Don't uh-huh. watch. Don't watch that. You don't need to watch that.
Terrific. Okay, let's do three places in the world you would love to have a second home if we could sort of teleport you there.
I'm not much for not one for international travel. I've only been to Europe once, and I've only been to any other part of the Americas once. So I'm going to pick local places. I'm not going to just go sight unseen to some countries that uh-huh. I am not familiar with, even though it's really appealing to get out of the United States. That uh-huh. would be wonderful. I will say probably somewhere in the mountains. I really like Boulder, Colorado. So I'll say
sure.
I'm assuming at this point that I'm also rich and I can afford to live in Boulder, Colorado.
Well, listen, you might have a shack in Boulder, Colorado.
Oh, shit. Yeah, you're right.
But that's a small mountain cabin. It's the interpretation is, you know, you can really, it's loose. So You'll be fine.
Okay, so I'll say Boulder, Colorado. I'll say Austin, Texas, because if it were up to me, I would eat breakfast tacos for every meal of the day.
Same.
And then let's go to another part of the country. Oh, you know where? I really liked... this would be awful to live there, I think, but Acadia, Maine. The Acadia National Park. Gorgeous national park out there.
Oh, great. I've never been to Maine, and I feel some shame about that.
Hey, if you're going to go anywhere in Maine, go to the Acadia National Park, because it's fucking wonderful.
Acadia. This is great to know. Okay. Next category, let's do three foods that, in this alternate universe we're building, you can have as much as you want, and it could be, you know, if it's something that feels ecologically irresponsible, like if you're a vegetarian and you want to have that perfect thing, like this, all of that stripped away, and everything, somehow we figured it out, and no one's getting harmed, nothing is getting harmed.
Thank
or
God.
Or you would also just have, like, limitless sugar and not ever crash. Like, this is all, this is for the vice, shout out to the vice principal of gluttony. This category is for you, my friend.
Well, I mean, you said it. Like, if I can ethically consume an almond, I'm definitely going to be doing that. So, I will say, I love almonds, but I do sometimes feel guilty about eating them because they take more water to make than cows. I am a vegetarian, but I will go with, like, a migas breakfast taco because.
Sure.
Just like, you know, it's so simple, but eggs, cheese, beans. Oh, every day of my life I could eat that.
And when you were here, did you go to Home State by any chance? Home State Tacos? Did anyone tell you to go there?
No. I spent so much time. I went to this restaurant called Crossroads. Every time I go to California or to Los Angeles specifically, I go there because it's like upscale vegan food and it's so good. And I
Where
love
it
so. It is. It's. I truly don't. Know LA geography enough
I could
to know.
Absolutely look it
it's
up.
Called
this
Crossroads
not
Kitchen,
okay.
And it was the reason why I went to it was because it's by the Improv, which was where we did a show like 3 years ago, and it was like right next door.
It sounds like Melrose.
Oh, yeah, Melrose, yeah. Exactly.
Gotcha.
And I know that I went there with my wife, and she saw like two TikTok people that she knew. She's like, "These are TikTok people," and I was like, "Well, you know, it's a nice. It's LA. That's where we are." So okay, one more. God, if this is something that I truly. Just never have to like mess with the fuss of actually making, and I could just have. I will say a smoothie because I love me a smoothie, but nothing is worse to clean up than a blender, and nothing is worse than making something that has like 13 different ingredients that I have to blend up. But
I feel like I've heard a couple of smoothie talks on Hey Riddle Riddle. Sounds like Aaron's smoothie maker.
We had a big smoothie phase here in this household not too long ago. We've mellowed out on it a little bit, but smoothies come in like a cycle, so we'll be back to it eventually.
Yeah, you'll start to have that like arthritis feel in your knuckles, and you'll know that smoothie season's
coming. I should
have
another smoothie.
Okay, next category, let's do, and listen, I never feel good about this category when I know and appreciate the significant other of someone.
Oh, sure.
Unfortunately, in this alternate universe, not around. Not around, don't know her, alternate universe, three people you would like to have romance or sexy times with, any character, any era, any age.
We'll go with a salute to a little high school JPC, and I'll say Jessica Alba, like Dark Angel era, which is my first introduction to Jessica Alba. Probably Halle Berry, big on the list. God, and then I have to think of one more. I have an overabundance. What is Jessica Alba going to think when I choose someone else over her? Poor Halle Berry in this situation. They may never know. I don't know. And then I'll say Marge Simpson. We'll throw it back to the Simpsons and give a shout out to some animated love.
Great. Okay, next category. Let's do three people that you would love. We'll make it people who currently exist too, but it can be somebody that you probably won't have the opportunity to collaborate with on something. And it can be any type of creative thing. It can be somebody you'd love to improvise with, but it could also be like someone you wish you would have written a screenplay with or worked your tech job with, although that might be less pleasing to the listener because they'll be like, who's that?
Lord, no. Please tell me I don't have to work my tech job.
There
with
was
them.
A guy named Bob Coleman who I heard about worked there a couple years before me. People said he was such a gas. I always wished I had the chance to work with him.
It
could be a musician. You know what? It could be like, oh yeah, you didn't know that I wrote an album with Darius Rucker.
Oh my God. Ugh. So, a fun story from high school. One time, my Dad was picking me up from school, and since I live with my mom, not a lot of people knew my dad. And someone was like, "Hey, I saw your dad in the parking lot." And I was like, "Really?" And they were like, "Yeah, he looks like Hootie from Hootie and the Blowfish." And I was like, "Hootie?" And they're like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Darius Rucker?" And they were like, "I think so." And I was like, "Darius Rucker's black. You know that, right?" And they're like, "Oh, I guess I didn't see your dad." So I don't know who they saw or what they thought. But they said, I
that's so weird. I randomly plucked a name out of nothing, and that would be.
It was
a
running joke
that.
For a while that my dad was a Darius Rucker lookalike, which he's not. But he does look like he would enjoy Hootie and the Blowfish music. So maybe that is the
through
line.
That's what was seeping out. Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know. Let's see. People that I would love to work with creatively. I think that a large part of like my comedic voice was developed from watching and listening to like Jason Mantzoukas. So I'll throw Jason Mantzoukas on the list.
Great.
God, who else? I'll throw. Do they have to be in a creative field?
No, I know. Like I said, Bob Coleman.
My first and only thought here that is going through my mind is John Brown, who is an abolitionist who led an unpopular uprising that was doomed to fail. So we'll go with John Brown as well. Would have loved to be part of his abolitionist uprising. And then shout out to my homie Karl Marx. We'll throw him in there as well. Would have loved to learn from a king.
Great. Okay. Three movies that you can jump into. You're not reliving the plot. You're just sort of able to be in that world and you're safe.
This is great. Okay. Con Air, number one with the bullet. And put me as the role as just like another one of the inmates on the plane.
Great.
Preferably I live throughout the whole movie. But
you do.
Would just love to be there for the whole ride. Just see John Malkovich doing his thing.
That was definitely a movie where I saw it and I was like, movies can be like this?
That's just a
they
nonstop.
They can be this like, yeah, we're a fucking movie. What do you want?
Yeah,
we're
going to
do whatever we want, and we're going to know we're doing it.
It was so funny because Con Air remains one of my favorite movies. But it's, yeah, I fucking love that movie. Just a high-octane thrill ride. I'll put myself in The Game with Michael Douglas because I don't know why this movie's just always on my brain, but I see the horror that Michael Douglas went through in that movie, and I think, like, actually looks pretty fucking legit. Like, the fact that it's all a game at the end, and he's fine, like, that's pretty dope. I like that. Spoiler for The Game.
But that's definitely one of those, like, maybe don't watch this movie immediately again right after you find out it was just a game because you may find some holes.
Of course.
Things that could have gone very, very wrong very quickly.
I do also love that movie because it was, like, in before the time in technology where some of the stuff was like, oh, yeah, anyone could do this with technology nowadays and it wouldn't be that impressive. But it was back when they were like, how does this analog TV, like, read the news? It's like way before the age of deepfakes.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. Yep.
I feel like I would love to be in like a little romantic comedy movie, but now I'm trying to like struggle to see. Okay, I got it. I'll throw myself into The Holiday, which is like one of those Nancy Meyers movies. Myers? It doesn't matter.
Myers.
Just because it's such a fun and quaint concept to go to England or Los Angeles and, you know, swap lives for a little while. That to me seems fun.
I feel like I've seen that movie once, and I'm not sure if I'm remembering the movie or if I'm just filling in what I imagine the movie surely must have been based on that premise. Might have to revisit it.
I watched it not too long ago, and it's not bad. Jude Law is just so fucking charming and good looking. It's like, it's insane. Yeah. Like, I don't know how anyone in any romantic situation wouldn't meet Jude Law and be like, oh yeah, I'll fucking throw my whole life away for this guy.
Sure.
Like, why wouldn't I?
Sure.
So I still think that movie slaps.
Great. Okay. Second to last category. Let's do three bands that that do like write an album for you. Somehow they are able to kind of tap into this thing in JPC that when you put on this music, you're like, this is my life. How
wow.
do they do this? This is exactly the soundtrack I would want in this moment.
Man, this is tough. I think I'm going to do it based on what I'm listening to right now in my life.
Perfect.
So we're going to go with Songs About Jane Era, Maroon 5.
Great.
Especially because I think that album is almost 20 years old, I think, at this point. So it kind of hit at a very perfect time for me, you know, in high school adolescence. Also, one of my favorite bands in high school, we'll go with The Killers, especially their early stuff. I think that would be be absolutely thrilled if they had an album that was just kind of me oriented.
I would love that. I would love to hear the JPC Killers album, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, that would be. And then, okay, the last one, I think it'll be Dua Lipa. Not even necessarily because I want to hear that album, but I want other people to be like, oh, did you know that Dua Lipa did an album about me? And they're like, really? And I was like, yeah, for sure she did.
Brilliant. Yes, this is a good use of it. Very good use of it. Okay, and then final category for you. I'm feeling a lot of pressure.
Oh, I love the pressure. The pressure
is
on.
There any is there anything that like would be fun wish fulfillment for you that I haven't like touched on? Like, wait, Janet, you didn't know that I was secretly a massive Star Wars fan to the point where, of course, I would want to like bring a character from Star Wars into the real world to hang out with.
I did do a Star Wars actual play podcast for like 5 years. So there is a little bit. But I'll be honest, I wasn't the biggest Star Wars fan. Yeah. I just was on a Star Wars actual play podcast. Man, I don't know. Do I have like a secret fandom? Not really. I honestly, I don't love most things. especially when it comes to like pop culture or movies or television.
What about like a skill that? Oh no! I have one. Yeah.
So this could be like three fantasy novels that I would love to like live inside of, in the world of.
This is what I'm talking about. Give them to me.
So I was just on a Brandon Sanderson kick, and I was reading all of the Mistborn novels, which I'm not going to go with the Mistborn novels. I'm going to go with I think it's like The Way of Kings. Why am I not recalling the name of The King Killer Chronicle, I believe.
Oh, sure.
Is it?
Okay.
Different. King Killer Chronicle is also very different. Hold on. I'm going to figure this out because that's not one.
Okay.
Stormlight. The Stormlight Archives. I would put myself in the world of the Stormlight Archives. I don't know. Sanderson heads are going to come at me because it's all one expanded universe and it's all interconnected. But those are the books that I'm like.
You're allowed to play favorites.
That's
with
where
the books,
I'm at.
Right? Let him come. That's what I say. Let him come.
I never watched the show. No, it's not true. I watched the first season of the show and said this is not for me. But I loved the Game of Thrones books, the ones that that George R. R. Martin wrote. So I will put myself in those, and then I will go and throw myself into the world of Pat Rothfuss's. I think that one is the King Killer Chronicles. I think
that does seem right. That seems like that's Pat. Yeah.
The one that has Kvothe in it, or however you pronounce that name.
Wasn't HBO going to make a series like that? Are they still doing that? I feel like I heard about that like 5 years ago, but it seemed like it was in production. It didn't seem like it was like they might do a thing. I'm gonna have to do some research.
Would be thrilled for Pat if he made that money. Low-key, I would be upset about that because I'm like, HBO, I think, is the reason why we never got more Game of Thrones books,
right,
which I enjoyed.
Right.
So, and we're never going to get that third book anyway, which is fine because, hey, you're not you don't have to make anything, right? Like, you can just do whatever the fuck you want.
Sure.
But I would, if I'm being honest, would really love to read that third book one day, Pat, if you're listening.
All right. Give me a number between 1 and 7.
Oh, that's got to be 6.
Thanks for being sure of that and also almost apologetic. Like, I had no choice.
Well,
that's gotta be 6.
I am from the Midwest.
Sorry. okay. While I do some very metaphysical tabulations, will you please tell people about your podcasts, about being Shark Barkman, and anything else that people should track you down to?
Absolutely.
See, what if your real name was Shark Barkman, and this was just a weird wink to your family that you're I go by Shark Barkman on.
A funny thing about that story, when I was in college, I was working at this self-storage facility, and one time one of the managers of the self-storage facility came in and said, "Who is Shark Barkman?" And I said, "I'm sorry, what?" And he goes, "Who is Shark Barkman?" And I was like, "I don't have any idea what you're talking about." And he goes, "Someone keeps using the gate code and their name is Shark Barkman." And I went into the gate logs and I realized that I had created a profile for myself in like the gate log in a code, and I had put the name as Shark Barkman, which I had forgotten about because it was not important to me. So nowadays you can find me streaming of playing video games at twitch.tv/sharkbarkman. That's where you can find me. Also, I do a podcast with my buddy Johnny where we review pop music, which is called the Bill Buds Popcast. You can find that anywhere you find podcasts. Just look for Bill Budd's One Word. It's a play on Billboard, but no one understood that, which is the curse of anyone who does a podcast. And then, as we mentioned at the top, you can find me on a podcast called Hey Riddle Riddle with our fourth host, Janet Varney, and our two other ancillary hosts, Aaron Keefe and Adil Rafai, who are lovely, talented people as well. And that's pretty much all the places you... Oh, and I'm at JPSoFly on Twitter, because why not just have like different branding for all of my social media stuff?
Make them work for it.
Sure.
Make them work for it. Okay. I have the results of your... what I just made sound like a medical examination, and it's absolutely not.
This is...
I clicked my pen soberly, like, well, I have the results of your... Would you like to take a seat? This is going to be very scary.
I'll stand. I think I'll stand.
Okay. All right. You're going to want to take a seat. This is going to upset you deeply. Listen, I had to rip the Band-Aid right off. Just kidding. It's not a Band-Aid because you got a mansion in Boulder.
Oh, man. A mansion in Boulder.
That's us trying to say. The air horn I accused you of playing in high school is what I was trying to do.
Okay.
That didn't sound anything like an air horn.
No.
You do an air horn.
Well, so I can't do an air horn, but I can do the wah, 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 which is I feel like is closer.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, that's like the hype horn. I'll do the hype horn.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, good. All right. So you have this beautiful mansion in Boulder.
Cool.
You also have the ability to. I mean, this is great. You get to jump into Con Air. You get jump into Con Air. Sorry, Mansion in Boulder. You ain't never going to be there because you're always going to be in Con Air.
First class flying Con Air.
I mean, it's going to be... There are a lot of tough choices in front of you. You're going to be in Con Air as much as possible. Yet at the same time, Jessica Alba is going to be like, I never see you anymore. Where are you? Are you mad at me? And you know who else is going to be like that? Karl Marx. I never see you anymore.
Oh, this is a rock and a hard place.
Why don't you want to change the world with me? All I hear about is Con Air this, Con Air that. What about progress?
Honestly, if it's between Karl Marx and Jessica Alba, sorry, Mr. Marx, your theories are going to have to wait.
That's a lot. There's just a lot going on here. I also want to congratulate you on your unlimited and yet guilt-free supply of almonds.
Oh,
I'm going to have to come in there and get in on that because I'll go through like a year of not eating almonds and then I'll like reward myself like I've earned almonds. Like I've made this giant sacrifice. Like, no, it still sucks. You still should be eating them. Yet I'll eat them for a while and be like, I hate myself. I hate myself. I hate myself.
To me, though, it's like a snack replacement where it's like if I was going to eat chips or almonds, you know, hands down, that's the better choice for me, like in terms of like my health. Sometimes you have to think about this. And sometimes I just choose not to think about the ecological devastation because it's like, what am I going to do? Eating almonds, that's going to change the world? I don't think so.
That's our problem. That's our problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not explored at all during your arc on The Simpsons many years ago.
Oh, thank God.
They like to slip in some satirical stuff to make you think every once in a while, but that did not occur with your character on The Simpsons. I feel like we're going to have to come up with a name for your character. It might be Shark Barkman. Long time existed, and I didn't even need to worry about it. You also have the ability to jump into the Stormlight Archives books. Oh. And as if that weren't enough, all of this can happen to a signature soundtrack created for you by Dua Lipa.
Wow. Oh my God. Dua Lipa is going to hate she's going to hate having to read those Stormlight books. She's going to hate having to research.
She's going to have to.
And they're long, Dua Lipa. They are long.
Sorry, Dua Lipa. Well, listen. This was fantastic. I'm so happy I got to have you on the podcast. I don't know if in your ramblings and amblings through your podcast, I almost said through your Billboard podcast, which is just rubbing sand and salt into the wound.
Of the name, for sure.
Your Bill Bud podcast. If you have come across Don Henley's Boys of Summer, this is my Boys of Summer series. I only podcast dudes in the summer, and I do invite my guest dudes to sing, chant, or rap, or make up from scratch because they don't know it at all. a snippet of Don Henley's Boys of Summer.
So I'm not an Eagles fan, and I don't know shit about Don Henley, but there a while back on Bill Buds, Johnny and I, we did our top 10 like songs of the summer, and I don't remember where it was for me, but it was definitely top 10. There's
okay.
There's a version of Boys of Summer by a band called the Ataris, which is like a pop punk band, and I'm
surely
a big pop punk.
Surely I've heard
punk.
It over the years of doing this.
I'm a big fan of that version of the song, and it's honestly, if I think about Boys of Summer, that's the version that I think of.
Love it.
So if I can beg your indulgence for a moment, it's all yours. I would love to perform a version of the Ataris version of Boys of Summer, sang as a duet between an angel and the devil. Do you mind?
Not at all. I insist.
Here we go.
Out on the road today, I saw a black flag sticker on a Cadillac. A little voice inside my head said,
don't look back. You can never look back. I
thought I knew what love was.
What did I know?
Those days are gone forever. I should just let them go, but
I can see you. Your brown skin shining in the sun.
You got the top pulled back in the
radio on, baby. My love for you will still be strong after the boys of
summer have gone.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
The best part was when the devil just got to sing one note. and the angel took over. That was a new all-time great. That was a new winner. No question about it. That was great.
Thank you so much.
And people don't know this because this is not a visual podcast, but a tiny devil and a really big angel.
Yeah, really big angel with a deep voice.
A really big, super sassy angel came in. The devil was really small, but
tiny.
It had a very deep voice. So I'm sorry people had to miss that aspect of it, but it was real.
Listeners of Hey Riddle Riddle will know that I got a soundboard a couple weeks ago. And if anyone is wondering why, it is because I wanted to do this bit on your show. And then I went and downloaded a soundboard. And now it's my new favorite fucking thing in the world. And so I've just been using it at every opportunity. Absolutely.
I changed your life. I listened to the episode that came out today, and I feel like it was happening in that one.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was like, I don't know. This, I actually had this thought. I don't know why Casey made the decision to make it that voice. Like, it kind of makes sense. But then it like came back later. And I was like, wait, I'm trying to remember what the bit is that is that important that Casey being the mastermind of all of this is making that happen. And now to know it was you.
Yeah.
It was you.
If anything, I'm just making our engineer's job harder every time I flip the soundboard on for no fucking reason. Been doing a lot in our ads as well. Sure, our advertisers are really pleased with that, but I work under a philosophy of if it's fun for me, it's probably fun for someone, right? Why not?
It's way more fun for me knowing what I know now, for sure. I have the singular pleasure of feeling partially to blame / responsible and to thank for you having the soundboard. So no one else can feel the joy I'm feeling right now. You just can't. But I feel it is very enjoyable, and I very much look forward to the next time I record with you guys. And I don't have a soundboard, but now I actually furtively looked around the room to be like, what do I have that can alter my voice?
What's fun?
That's not a soundboard. What do I think that's going to be? Talking through a bracelet?
Yeah.
Like, there's no...
I guess you could use, like, you could do, like, impressions, or you could, I don't know, but I'm not going to do that. I got the soundboard now. I never have to do an impression ever
again.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get, like, the hype horn, and it'll just be, like, every once in a while, I'll just be like, and that's why I said, mah, 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 mah. That's never going to get old.
No.
Ever.
Never.
Oh, JPC, that was so worth it, and you have shamed everyone before and to come singing that song.
That was my only goal.
You and your buddies, the angel and devil.
Uh-huh.
All right, everybody, now you know why I am so crazy about JPC and am so honored to get to do stuff with him. Please check all of those things out, and if nothing else, we'll see you at that storage unit, because we all know the passcode now.
We all know.
I guess we don't, because the character was Shark Barkman.
Just ask for Shark Barkman, and they'll give you the code.
Okay, great. Awesome. Bye.
Bye.
The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees? Maybe we should.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.